Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are and where we come from. So who are you and where do you come from?
Is that a song we used to sing at school? Everywhere we go. Jeez, it brings back memories. A long, long time ago. Where's the time going? But anyway, to answer your question, where am I from?
Who are you?
And who am I? Yeah. Oh, geez, that's the question of the century. Who am I? Paul Stenson is my name. I am, where am I from? Is that what you're asking me? I grew up in Terranure to parents who are both from Mayo. So my heart is kind of in Mayo. Achill Island is the best place on earth. It's where I go to kind of let off steam and just chill.
Okay.
Sea swim. Although it's really sea standing.
Senior.
You'll often find that people who say they go sea swimming, they're actually just standing. They don't even, you know, do the breath stroke, never mind the front crawl. It's sea standing.
Okay.
So I like to sea stand in Achill. What was the other question?
That's it. Who are you? Where'd you come from? So yeah. What, Paul, I was, I actually, a while ago, you put up something about, someone asked about podcasts, and I got that screenshot had sent to me about, I don't know, 100 times. They were like, get on to him, get on to him, get on to him. And then everyone since. And then just today, as I was talking to someone else arranging a podcast with them, they said to me, you should do it. She said, because he's a marketing genius. And I was chatting to my Paul then, and I said to Paul, and no, Paul said, no, Rebecca, he's an out-and-out marketing genius.
Mm.
And I said, but he's also very controversial. People might say he's also very controversial. So from the beginning, though, before we get into that, I just want to go to the very, very start of what it was like growing up in Achill. We know from your blogs and from your stories that you're adopted. So do you want to start at the start of your life and tell me about yourself?
Okay, so first of all, thank you for the very high compliments. My head is, I don't think I'll fit out the door when we finish this. So I grew up in Dublin, but okay. I would have spent most of my summers in Achill. Terranure is where I was born. Went to school, national school in Terranure. Then I went to secondary school in Rathmines, St. Mary's College, Rathmines. Played rugby. It was an all-boys school. I would have played rugby up until transition year when I was involved in an altercation with another rugby team from a kind of a rival school. And I was set upon by about 15 people. Because I developed a little bit quicker than most people physically. And I was a big frame of a man, even back in school. And I'll never forget my guidance counsellor, who was also the rugby coach, telling me that when I was on the rugby pitch, you know, whenever I got worked up, I really caused some damage, you know. And I guess I was a good rugby player, but I was so, I suppose, aggressive or dominating on the pitch that one day after we finished a match, I was set upon by 50, but literally the team, all on bikes, who kind of attacked me. I was with two other guys. And I decided to throw the hat in at that point, and I kind of look back and regret it. I'm almost ashamed of doing that, because really I should have said, no, I'm not going to let this stop me. I did let it stop me. But I guess it's little things like that that give me the strength to carry on nowadays. So if there's a setback, like my car being broken in the other day, whether that was a message to me that I'm not welcome in the area, or if it was an opportunist thief just wanting to steal a bag, I don't know. But I suppose Some people might have said, right, to hell with that. We're not locating here. We're getting the fuck out. I don't want to be located here. But things like that, I suppose, because of what happened to me in my past, I don't let things like that bother me. And
were you hurt really badly?
I wasn't hurt at all.
Were you not?
No. Yes. My car was hurt badly.
No, when you were 15.
Oh, I was headbutted twice in the back of the head. I was given a very firm jab in my nose, blood everywhere. It's why my nose is kind of a little bit bent at the moment. So, I suppose at that age, I was physically, but also I was like, yeah. Again, part of the learning experience, the adoption thing.
So just for a second, tell me with the rugby.
Yeah.
So you go in, first of all, you go home to your parents and they see you in that state. Mm-hmm. And are they saying to you, because I do want to get into where'd you get this from? Like, you know, were they saying to you, oh, Paul, give up? Or were they saying, no, go back in there tomorrow and show them, you know, what way do they feel about that?
I think they were pretty much indifferent about it. I don't think they were very much pushing me to carry on or pulling me back. But they were obviously very upset by it, just as much as I was. But no, I don't remember them being overly enthusiastic about me continuing or discontinuing. I couldn't really tell you, Rebecca.
And you said as well there that you were quite aggressive on the pitch. And, you know, why do you think that you were like that?
I would imagine that. So, like, I'm interested in psychology and I'm interested in human behaviour and things like that. And I'd imagine that. So I think you're probably born gay. I think it's a nature versus a nurture thing. And when you go to a kind of an alpha male rugby playing private school where it's all the lads, you know, I think there may have been an effort on my part to over compensate for the fact that deep down I was a raging homo. So I was very aggressive on the pitch. You know, I was prop forward. I was physically strong. And I was kind of asserting my dominance on the rest by possibly that's why I was doing it. I don't know. That's a rationalization that I have in my head now. I haven't really given it too much thought, but it would seem like a plausible reason.
Definitely. Definitely. You know, and especially as you said, it's all boys club, isn't it? Look, obviously, I'm from the north. I didn't go to private schools. But I get that vibe that it is very much an all boys club and cheerio, pal, and all get together and all. Is it like that growing up?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like being in a male, an all boys private school, rugby playing school, like to be gay is a big no-no. You know, back in those days.
Yeah.
And that would have been, like I did my leaving in 1998. So I would have started secondary school in 1992. And back in those days, sure, look, being gay was only recently decriminalised, you know, so it was still a very much taboo thing. Mm. So I wasn't out at all. I didn't come out until my mid-20s, actually.
Really?
But I would have known.
Yeah.
You know? So I think I was hiding it, yeah. I was hiding it. And then in my early 20s, what I'd do is I'd still hide it to everybody, my family included, but when I'd get to a certain level of drunkenness, because I was always, you know, using alcohol to medicate, my true self would come out. So I spent my days in college perpetually drunk, and I'd you know, in my early 20s go out on the piss with my mates here in Dublin, and you know, at a certain time of the night when I get to the correct level of drunkenness where I have the Dutch courage, I'd disappear. And of course, I'd be going down to the George. And there was one night, two of my mates followed me and found me. But anyway, that's another day's work. But you'd have to realise with me, Rebecca, is I have a terrible tendency to go off on tangents, as we're learning now. I don't even know what the question was.
That's okay. But this is what I want you for. And I said, I'll pull you back if I feel the need to pull you back. But I think what you're saying here, unfortunately, Paul, it was a lot of people's lives, a lot of young men and women's lives then, you know, and even maybe still now, maybe that's still happening. You know, I don't know. Maybe it is still happening. It's hard.
I know of... Let's just say I know of people who are now married with kids who are gay.
Yeah.
And I'm obviously not going to mention any names. But I am aware. And that is happening.
So sad.
And it is sad. And, you know, I'd urge any of your listeners who are in a predicament like that, not even a predicament, I don't want to give it a negative connotation, but just be proud of who you are and embrace your individuality and embrace your difference. It is the individuals of this world who create change. It's not the people following the herd or trying to fit into societal norms. Be yourself. That's one thing I'd say that's really important. And if you are gay, so what? You know?
I think it's now, like, the, you know, my daughter now, she's 11, and in her class, I won't go into too much detail, but I know there's a lot, has been a lot of conversation around being gay, and, you know, and she's came to me, and she said, and I said to her, well, how do you feel about it? And she said, whatever, ma'am, they can just, if that's who they are, that's what they want to be, you know, and I was like, okay, that's good. So I do think it's a little bit different, but just take it back to, if you can, and if you want, Paul, the two guys when they found you in the George.
Yeah. They always had suspicions. Let's just say they weren't too surprised when they found where I was going. I was mortified.
Were you?
Absolutely mortified. And it was very much, you know, please, you don't need to say this to anybody. Just please keep it under the carpet. I really would prefer. And I suffered a lot of, I suppose, anxiety at the time. Thinking like the cat was out of the bag. And I suppose because I come from a fairly conservative background, I suppose there was a lot of shame, you know, and I suppose that's always been the case. I know now that my mum and dad accept me for who I am, but I would have no doubt that if I was involved with, if I had a wife and 2.5 kids and, you know, a nice house in leafy South County Dublin, they may be happier than they are now. That's why, I could be way off the mark, but I just think that that's the way it is, you know? So, and look, it's a different generation, you know, and in many ways you don't blame them for feeling that way because, back then, you know, I suppose we live in a very liberal society now. And since the gay marriage referendum and all that, it's a different Ireland. It's a better Ireland. And it allows people to be who they actually are more easily than it was back in my day. But no, my mum and dad love me, obviously. Maybe I'm wrong to have said what I've just said, but
to be honest, Paul, I do think that unfortunately your mum and dad's generation, my mum and dad's generation, would feel that way.
Yeah,
they do. And you know, people are, you know, they're blessed that they might be like, I don't know, but I tend to agree with what you've just said there, because personally I know my parents would feel the same way as you, what you've just said about your parents. So was it difficult coming out to them? And first of all, let me say, were you surprised with your friends' attitude that night, like that they were supporting you? Because they were supporting you that night, were they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But one thing I'd say just before we move on about the whole the parents thing, I think the Catholic influence on the parents is strong. And, you know, my parents would probably be strong Catholics. And I think, you know, it's because of the teachings of the church that they are the way they are.
Okay.
Whereas the church is dominated by, I suppose, the biggest ring of homosexual men on planet Earth. And I stand by that. I'm not saying that. I would think that a lot of priests are of the homosexual variety, and it's and that they pontificate from, you know, their high horse about how being gay is a sin, whereas they are actually that way inclined themselves. I suppose it's a bit like, you know, people who are overtly homophobic, you'd always question, strange, a bit strange. Now, I wonder, is your man a raging homo himself? A bit like that, you know? So I think there's an irony there about, you know, the Catholic Church's teachings, when it's those who are doing the teaching that are actually what they are saying they shouldn't be. Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent again.
Do you know, I absolutely value your opinion on that. I do value your opinion. And I wouldn't necessarily, probably, I don't know whether I would agree completely with it, but I value your opinion on that. And I think the Catholic Church has, and we won't even get into it, but has a lot to answer for at the same time as well. Paul, tell me about coming out to your parents. What was it like?
I didn't come out to them.
Did you know?
I went via my sister.
Okay.
In fact, I don't think I've ever said the words, I am gay. Really? To, yeah. Because I think maybe I don't have the strength to do it, you know. I do now, but they know I'm gay, so I don't really need to tell them anymore. But I think the act of coming out is an ongoing thing. It's not like you can come out once and that's it, you're done. Phew, everyone knows now. Because in reality, not everybody knows. And I think for a gay man who isn't overtly camp the way, you know, some might be, you wouldn't know. You know, you wouldn't necessarily know. Now, in many ways, being camp is an advantage because there's no question about it. They are gay. But being a man who appears to be straight acting has to spend his life coming out. Or a girl who's like straight acting. Because, right, you might come out to your family and you might come out to your friends, but, you know, little things like you're at a function and, you know, you're there with a friend who's a girl and someone, oh, this is your wife, is it? Or, you know, you're on a golf course if you play golf and, you know, are you married? Or yeah, all of these incidents require you to actually come out. So yeah, it's a life of coming out if you're straight acting. I'm not saying, am I straight acting, Rebecca? I don't know. Would you know I'm gay?
No, I don't know. You know, it's terrible because you don't want to say, to look at you, you wouldn't think you were gay. Like, that's like bonkers, do you know what I mean? Yeah. But that's people's thought though at the same time.
Mm.
It is, you know, and like I recently was at something and I said, oh, this guy was asking me for some details and all. And one guy said to me, sure, he's coming on. And I said, no, he's not coming on to me, he's gay. And I ended up going to two guys, gay guys that I know who were on the trip. And I said, do you know, he's gay. And they went, no, he's not gay. And I just thought he was gay. So it's not like to say, to look at you, but like, yeah, to look at you, you're probably straight acting.
Mm.
But you don't mean to be straight acting, I suppose, you know. Mm. But yeah, do you know what? I have never realised what you've just said there, that you have to constantly come out to people. Mm. That has never been a thought in my mind.
Yeah. So it's a lifetime of coming out. It's not just a once off, you know. But when I came out, so like, So the way it happened with my sister is we had a mutual friend who was gay himself. And so he knew I was gay and I knew he was gay and that was that. But he told Elaine. I didn't. And Elaine then confronted me and said, is it true? And I said, yes, it is. Are you going to tell mum and dad? Can you? And then I let her do it. I stood in the kitchen one day. My mum and dad were up in the hallway. And Elaine went up and brought the news. And it wasn't very, it's not as if a tsunami kind of came rushing towards me.
Or love, hugs and love.
Yeah, it was quite an indifferent reaction. It was just business as usual.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you appreciate that?
I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I suppose my overwhelming feeling now is, why didn't I just have the balls to do it myself? And that's probably where I'm at. Might have been a different reaction if I did that. Possibly positive or negative, I don't know. But I think the business as usual, I'm good with the business as usual reaction.
Did you want the gush of love? Did you want the hugs and we're here for you and we always knew and you did you want that or?
I'd say it wouldn't have done any harm for somebody who's fairly ashamed of being who they are. It would have been nice. That doesn't mean I was seeking it, but as I said, how everything has turned out is kind of is fine, you know.
Is it though?
I'm happy now.
Are you?
Yeah.
I don't know why, Paul, but I'm just getting so emotional. Like,
don't bother. I'm not that special, Rebecca. But I appreciate you getting emotional. It's fine. I'm happy now. You know, I am happy. Genuinely, I'm like, yeah, it is what it is. You know, this, look, there's just some things that you can control and then there's others you can't. And mum and dad's attitude towards homosexuality is just one of those things that is what it is. It's not like, you know, and I'm accepting of that, you know. There's nothing I can do or you can do or anyone can do. That's just the way it is.
It's life.
And it's just life. So, I mean, I like, they love me. I love them. Mom is fit to smack me across the head with her handbag every now and then because I put her up on Instagram too much. But
love
she
it.
Loves that secretly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a lot of love there, you know. So it's like, it is what it is and I'm happy. I'm happy out.
And I will move on, but I just want to just do one little thing that you said to me. You said about shame. Is a shame just from being gay or is there something else there?
No, the shame would be my sexual preference. I don't think there's anything else there. Are you getting at the adoption thing?
No, I'm not getting at it, but I'm wondering maybe I am getting at that. Is that something that you hold on to or like at what age were you adopted? Did you know you were adopted?
Being adopted is like constantly at the back of my mind. It's like it's there. There's nothing I can do. It's something that I give thought to like every single day. But I've learned to kind of see it in a positive light. And you know, I've done a lot of therapy in my time, and there was one particular therapist I had who was very much like telling me that I need to be proud of who I am. And by that I mean being gay, being adopted, etc., etc., being an alcoholic, all that. So he kind of trained me or conditioned me to see that that's a strength and not a weakness. And I'll never forget that. And I'm very very happy to have met that counsellor. But the adoption thing, there was always this feeling of being a little bit different, you know. But now I'm channeling it in a positive way by owning it.
Mm.
And like what I do online or whether it's the White Moose or my own social channels or whatever it is, I'm kind of like, I have this confidence inside me that comes from my difference.
Yeah.
That's pushing me on.
Your like inner power, that's your
exactly.
strength.
Exactly. And it is. It's so the fact that I'm a little bit different to other people is what makes me strong. But I have an awful lot of self doubt as well, and I sometimes have an awful lot like I'm here kind of whinging and moaning to you about the fact that I'm gay and adopted when there's people dying of cancer, you know what I mean? And I feel guilty.
Yep.
And do you know, or
I know, but
people dying of COVID or whatever it is, people who've been injured in wars or whatever, like there's people a lot worse off than me. And I get consumed by this guilt that here I am saying, oh, look at me. I'm, you know, so that's part of me as well. I'm quite a complex character, Rebecca, in case you haven't noticed. And, but in terms of the whole adoption thing, it's on my mind all the time.
Did they always tell you you were adopted?
I never remember being told, okay. Which is a good thing.
Okay.
I never remember. I was like, it was like, so there's three in the family, Paul, Elaine, Joanne. Paul and Elaine are both adopted. Joanne okay. is the natural, the real kid.
Biological, Paul.
Yeah.
Biological.
And but she's like my sister.
She is
your
sister.
They're all both my sisters.
She is your sister.
You know.
But you should say that she is your sister.
They are, yeah. But we were, Elaine and, so Joanne was born, but Elaine and Paul arrived on the scene. And that was the expression always used. You arrived on the scene. It's interesting that the word scene was used when I'd later go on to, maybe that's why I'm a raging homo, is it, Rebecca? Mind you, I don't like the scene anymore. I hate the scene now. The scene is the most judgmental space on earth, really. And I mean the gay scene.
Oh, I can imagine.
Everyone thinks, you know, gay bars are free from judgment. You can go and be gay and no one will judge. They are the most judgmental space. People looking you up and down. What are you wearing? You know, all this. Anyway, going off on another tangent.
We'll come back to that.
So Elaine and Paul arrived on the scene. And that was the story we were fed from. I must say they managed it very, very well, you know. And although there was a time where Elaine and I were rooting in the attic and we found some identifying information about our biological parents. And Elaine found a ruby ring from her mum and I was distraught over that. It was terrible. It was
really horrible. I can imagine.
It was kind of like this fairy tale had been burst, you know, this life I was living was, although I was told that I was adopted, it was at that moment it kind of just burst, and it was, and I was only, I suppose, 11 or 12. That was a tough time, but the shame of being adopted. No, not really. It's the shame of being gay, adopted. Not shame. I wouldn't associate the word shame.
No, not shame with that. Tell me at 11 and 12, and you, like, how did you deal with your emotions then?
On my own. Elaine didn't seem too perturbed by it. She was kind of almost happy about it. I was in a bad way. And, I think I did say it to Mom. Wouldn't have said it to Dad. Or I think I was so upset that I didn't even want to talk about it. I can't quite remember. I think I did keep it to myself. But at that age, it was probably quite difficult. Because... I actually think I didn't want to tell Mum and Dad, Rebecca. Because A, we probably shouldn't have been rooting in the attic.
Yeah.
And B, maybe I didn't want to upset them by them knowing I found out.
You didn't want it to be real, maybe?
I possibly didn't want it to be real, yeah. So I wanted to get back to normal life and kind of forget it ever happened. It was terrible. It was really horrible. Horrible. Whatever, 24, 48 hours, whatever it was. Or maybe longer than that. Or maybe I've never recovered from it, Rebecca. I don't know. But like, I think it would have been a lot worse if I hadn't been told.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
The fact that I was, the letter contained information about the identity of the parents, what they did for a living, where they were from. You know, how many siblings I had.
Have you ever looked out for them?
Sorry, I don't think it said how many siblings. I later found out how many siblings I had when I spoke to a counsellor in the HSE. But it had other information that, like, I was learning at 10 or 11 or 12. I can't remember exactly the age. That just hit home hard. And... But again, all these events, you know, are, they make you.
Yeah.
Do you know? And I suppose it's events like that that give me the strength to do what I do today. You know, and I'm fearless today.
Oh, I know.
You know, I, like, nothing will faze me today. And I suppose when I removed alcohol out of my life, alcohol was a terrible problem that I probably used alcohol to kind of medicate issues that I had inside or escape from my inner demons. But when I removed that out of my life changed to the extent that nothing really was a problem anymore. Nothing would be on the same level that drink was, which gives me the strength to do pretty much anything, whether it's put up free blowjob signs in our new outlet, or whether it's, you know, eat letters from the Data Protection Commissioner, or it's like, whatever I do, tell vegans I'll shoot them, or whatever it is. Like, I suppose the madness or the bravery.
Bravery.
In, well, I'd say madness too. Mm. That comes from the fact that I'm free. I no longer have that huge burden on my life that was drink. So, like, there's nothing that will ever, ever compare to how bad my life was when I was in the at the height of my drinking.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about that? How did you get out of it? How did you, like, when did you realise you were at rock bottom, and how did you get out of it?
So the one event that I remember, and the only reason I remember it is because I have CCTV footage of it. And I'm very grateful for the CCTV. If it wasn't there, I would have never known. But when I talk about my drinking, I would rarely use the word remember in the same sentence, because I didn't remember anything. Because I wouldn't drink to socialise. I drink to get out of it. And I would never drink without having a blackout at the end of it. So it's not as if I drink every single day of the week. Mm-hmm. And it's not as if I'd need a bottle of vodka in the first thing in the morning. I would never be a morning drinker. Mm-hmm. But when I started, I couldn't stop. And that is the classic definition of an alcoholic. When you start, you can't stop. And that was me through and through. And there was one night, and of course, when I was full of drink, I did other stuff as well. Because I think anybody with an addictive personality like me, you know, your addiction isn't confined to one substance. You want it all, and you want it now. And it's like, see those chocolate biscuits there in front of me? Mm-hmm. I'm surprised I haven't finished them all off now, because I suppose that's the addictive nature. Like, put one chocolate biscuit in front of me, I'll finish them all. I'm quite controlled here, Rebecca. Although,
you don't have to
we've only started. So I'd imagine they'll be gone now by the end of the day.
We'll get Paul to make another cup of tea first, and we'll have the rest of it.
Oh, I'll have another cup of tea, yeah. One sugar and a bit of milk, please. Not my joking. So there was a night I was out, and I was out with Jason, my ex-partner. And I was drinking in my usual way and taking whatever it was, whether it was ecstasy or coke or whatever it was, or probably a combination of both. And I fell down the stairs in the Dragon on Georgia Street from top to bottom. I had to be escorted out. Jason tried to get me in a taxi. No taxi would take me. So we got a rickshaw from Georgia Street to Phibsborough, Charles of a Lodge. And because that's where we were staying that night. Or no, we weren't. We were staying in my house, which isn't too far from Charleville Lodge. But we always left my house keys in the hotel, because I'd probably lose them if I went out. And so we got the rickshaw back. And then, like, I couldn't stand. And as you know, Charleville Lodge is full of CCTV cameras. Mm-hmm. So I stood outside while Jason went inside to get me my house keys, and he sat me down at a bench, and I fell off the bench. And there was a customer of the hotel who saw this, and she came out, an American guest, I think, and she was lifting me up. Now, I was the manager of this hotel she was staying in. And here's a guest of the hotel helping me off the ground with Jason so that I could walk home after that. And Jason told me this happened the next day, and I said, "You're joking." And then something made me look at the CCTV. And when I saw that, it was like, that's it. I can't do this, you know. And I gave up. But my life has been a little bit like a roller coaster. I give up for months, then I slip. Then I give up for months again, and I slip. And there was another time I was out in Chernobyl working in an orphanage and just doing a voluntary thing for a weekend and with a group of people. And we were drinking heavily out there, and I'll never forget sitting in one of the wards with a kid who was like, wow, it was like, I don't know if you're familiar with Chernobyl or what happens out there, but like, because of the disaster that took place back in 1980, was it 1980 or whatever, like, kids that are born from then are often, you know, born with deformities, but they're not kept by the parents. They're just automatically shipped into this orphanage. And I was sitting there with this beautiful child who needed all the love could get. And here's me more concerned about my hangover. And I thought, there's something not right here. So that was the first time. So there's been periods I've been off it. So the first time was actually Chernobyl had happened before the American guest incident. So there's always like things that happen to stop me. But I do slip. Now, what I would have done in the past was I would have counted the days. Oh, I'm 8 weeks sober. Oh, I'm 8 months sober. I'm a year sober. I'm 13, 14 months sober. I don't do it this time. I'm not counting anymore.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's linear. I think it's like, I'm very into mindfulness now. I'm very into meditation. And I think living in the moment, like, Rebecca, all we have in this life is the here and now. This is all we have. What's happened in the past is gone. We don't know what's going to happen in another hour. This moment now, me looking at you and the tears coming down your face.
I know. You're sending me over the edge.
We have. And so that's the importance of mindfulness. And that, I practice that a lot these days. So I don't count, oh, I'm 60 days sober. It's like, I'm now sober. And I'm not going to drink today. But that's it. Tomorrow doesn't really matter. Neither does yesterday. Today, now, I'm not drinking. That's what helps me.
Good for you. It's a good coping mechanism. Yeah. But you are very brave to... I'm going to get Paul to make tea now in a second. Everyone's gone. Oh, yeah. You're very brave to actually go and look at that CCTV. That must have been... You almost had courage to... Or did you just go, I'm just going to look at it?
I think the way I felt at the time would have made it beneficial for me to look at it, because I was at rock bottom anyway. And I think I needed to see it to confirm in my mind that this is not the direction I should be going in life. So, yeah, there was a bit of bravery there. But I'm glad I did take a look at it that day.
Good for you. Good for you.
Can I have a chocolate biscuit?
Go on, we're going to break. Yeah, we're going to make tea now. So we just took a break and had a little cup of tea there. And so can I just, I am going to move on. So you didn't go to AA, you haven't done anything like that, you're just doing it yourself.
I did go to AA, yeah.
You did you? Yeah.
I did. I tried AA, but I see a counsellor every week, one-on-one. Now, during COVID, that kind of fell by the wayside because, you know, you couldn't... COVID was challenging for me, as it was for a lot of people. And I think People with addiction issues, like I think the addiction services calls going into them were like doubled or tripled or something like that during COVID, because we have this thing, I have this thing with my counsellor whereby we talk about being plugged in. So if you're kept plugged in, whether that's going to the gym or whether that's going to meetings or whether that's doing meditation or mindfulness or, you know, whatever it is, sea swims or sea stands, that's a way of keeping plugged in.
Okay.
Back in COVID, at the start of COVID, back when we thought we were all going to die, which was like, if you remember the first wave, it was like we were unsure, were we actually going to survive this? Seeing all these army trucks over in Italy carrying thousands of bodies to the morgue, it was like we didn't know what was going to happen. But the gyms were closed. The counselling sessions ended. The meditation classes ended. The sea swims, you weren't allowed outside 2K. So I live in Phibsborough, there's no sea within 2K. And all these things that would have kept me plugged in disappeared. And I struggled big time in COVID. So I then, a few months later, started doing online Zoom counselling classes, or courses, or sessions.
Did that work? Does that work?
It does. Mm. I was very skeptical about it at the beginning. I was thinking, you know, who am I talking to here? Who's listening in? Mm. You know?
Mm. Would you be paranoid about that?
I was a bit wary of it, you know. Not that anybody would want to listen in, but you don't know. You're doing something across the internet. You know, surely there's a possibility that, you know. So I was wary of it and I was skeptical of it and I was like, I don't know. It was offered to me, but I just turned it down at first. But then I started doing it a couple of months later because I hit rock bottom again and it actually, I noticed the benefits pretty much straight away. So now I'm back seeing him on a one-to-one basis, which is important. But the Zoom did work for me, surprisingly, over COVID.
And is the counselling your lifeline? Like if you missed it for a week, would you find yourself feeling very down? Or like if you missed it for 2 weeks, would you miss it then? Like would you start missing it?
No, I think it's one element of a suite of different activities that I do that keep me going. So you might remove the counselling, but I still have the gym, so I'd be okay. But if you, and you might remove the meditation, but I'd still have the counselling and the gym, you know what I mean? So, but if you removed all of them at once, which COVID did.
Pull the plug.
You're plugged out, you know. So it's because of all of these different things coming together that keep me on the straight and narrow. But I do have challenging times, and it's usually at the weekend. And Instagram doesn't help because, you know, I'd have quite a lonely life at the moment because, you know, you might think, oh, Jesus, Paul, you must be so popular. You've like 60,000 followers and you've like 100,000 on White Moose. You must be Mr. Popular. They're not real, you know. Like, I can count my good friends, and I mean really good friends, on one hand, and I'm happy with that. But I do find, because I've given up booze and everything else, that, you know, you can have lonely times. I'm happy with my dogs. I'm very happy. In fact, I'd be much happier on occasion with my three dogs than I would be with three humans. But it's like Saturday night, 6 p.m., you're sitting at home. you're scrolling through Instagram, you see everybody getting ready to go out, or you see everybody on the street outside Panty Bar knocking back pints and partying, and it's like, I can't do that. And that can be challenging. So it's not all a bed of roses, but I'm getting through. And the people, again, much worse off than me.
You don't need to say that.
Yeah, well.
You don't need to say that. Yeah. Because looking at you over the while, like I have, and that was one question that I was going to ask you. Are you lonely? Because I could tell you were.
Mm.
I could tell, I could see it in you. That, and that's why I think I was getting a little, very emotional earlier on, because I could really tell, like in you, like I just want to give you a big hug.
Yeah. I'll
probably have a hug after this, maybe, if you're
a hugger. No, it's still COVID time. It's when I let hug.
I'm not allowed to hug. And I've seen it.
But the human connection, sorry to jump across you. That's another thing that was hugging. The power of a hug. You know, it's so powerful, you know. And during COVID times, we weren't allowed to hug each other. We weren't even allowed to shake hands. We weren't even allowed to be within 2 meters of each other. And that's another thing. The human connection went, as well as everything else that kept us plugged in. That went as well. And
this is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
That wasn't nice.
It was awful.
Mm.
It was really, really the pits. Like, it was awful.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry I've interrupted you.
No, you're fine. That's okay. I let you. I have to say, like I said it off camera, I just remind me of my husband. I don't know, you're just the same manners as him, like, so you remind me of Paul quite a lot.
He's much better looking now.
Well, I won't offend you in the grave. So, on that then, I was looking at your stories this week, and yesterday before, and you were like, I have 2 VIPs with me. And I messaged you, and you were so proud. You were so proud about talking about your mom and dad coming to see the new venue. And I loved it. And I think, you know you're saying that your followers aren't real, but I think like so many people would have had the same emotion I had watching you and watching that story. And this is what I want to move on to. Also, your mom. like, and as you said at the top of this, that she loves it really. I love watching her. And I think it's probably one of the things that people really love about your page is watching your and her, the dynamic of your and her relationship. Mm. Do you want to tell me a little bit about your mum and dad? But I know your dad is very much...
So, just before we go on to my mum,
yeah.
When you say my followers aren't real, that was possibly the wrong terminology to use. Mm. They are very real. Mm. And I often get messages, DMs from people, you know... that give me the strength to carry on, and like people saying that they've been having dark days and they take a look at my Instagram and my yeah. antics and it helps them to get through and all that. So I take back what I said about them not being real. They're very, very real. What I meant by that was I don't know them, and like yeah. they're not physically there with me, and they're not
exactly.
friends of mine, but they're very real. Mm. And even, you know, people do come up to me on the street and they thank me for what I do. And, you know, they say that, you know, their life is a little bit difficult at the moment. And thanks for making me smile and all this kind of stuff. And that is so nice. You know, it really is so, so nice.
How does it make you feel?
It makes me feel that what I'm doing is working. And, you know... I'm not going to say an existential crisis recently, but I was off Instagram for about a month there because I was in a bad way mentally, and I was consumed with very, very deep anxiety, and it wasn't nice at all. And I was kind of going through a bit of a rebirth, or I was searching within myself to kind of see, why do I do Instagram? Is it for my ego? Is it because, let's just face it, Rebecca, Instagram is all about, look at what I have. Look at where I am. Look at how lovely my body is. Look at what I have that you don't have. Aren't I great? It's like a platform for gloating. Mm. And there's a certain part of it that doesn't sit well with me. And I kind of asked myself this inner question, why do I do it? And the overwhelming answer was, because it makes people happy. And that's why I do it. And I think about all these people that come up to me or that message me saying, you know, you got me through a dark time. And I'm like, well, that's why I do what I do, you know? And that's quite important to me. Now, where were we?
And this is the thing with Instagram. Instagram is full of narcissists, but it's also, on the flip side of it, is that there's full of people who are helping people or, you know, as I said, getting through, like, your blowjob sign. Like, I can imagine so many people, like, even I got it today and comments, and I think when the blowjob poster went up, people were sending me messages going, please get him on, please get him on. And I was like, well, not for the want of trying, lads. I'm trying to pin him down, you know what I mean? So I do think it is very important what you're doing. Now, I've kind of lost what I was going to ask you as well. No, your mum. Mm. So tell me about your relationship with your mum and, like, the handbag snap. And do you know what it was? When she's like telling you to go, but then her and your dad were watching you dance over in Spain. Mm. And it's like, you know, she might be giving out about you doing it all, but she's also watching you at the same time.
Excuse me, my mouth is full of chocolate biscuit. One of my greatest followers, and I mean, the person who watches me day in, day out, I know I have very long stories, and I know 90% of people probably just tap through them and miss 90% of what I'm saying. But one of the people that watches everything I do religiously, every day, every minute, every second, is my mum. I see her, and I've no doubt she's listening to this. Mum, I bet you're listening to this, Mum. You say you're not, but you are. Isn't that right? And I think, you know, like, she's over an ankle, or she's down in Spain, whatever it is. And it's a way for her to kind of keep in touch with what I'm doing. But anyway, Mom loves Instagram secretly. And I think, you know, she'll tell you, well, you switch that camera off or you're going back to Dublin if you arrive out in Spain. Paul, if you don't put that camera away, you're going back on the first flight to Dublin. She's a typical mammy, you know. Mm. But then there's times where she's all dressed up, you know, and the makeup is on and we're going out for dinner and she loves the camera, you know, and she loves posing for photos. You've seen the photos on my page. Yeah. So it's like, I think deep down, look, I think mum and dad realise that. Now, Charles Village belongs to them. White Moose Cafe belongs to me. But I think they're coming around to the whole social media thing. I think they're probably beginning to realise that, you know, what Paul is doing is actually creating value. It's like making the business a few bob. I've put the business on the map. I think they realise that now. Mm. And I think they're more accepting of what I do. And so she'll say, put that phone out, put that phone away, and I'll hit you with the handbag if you don't put that phone away. And Paul, you know, she'll say, but deep down, I think she's a bit of a diva, you know. And her mum, my granny, was exactly the same. Really? And her mum, Gran, was what I called her, was my best friend. And she died at 98.
Wow.
But like, I'd prank her, I'd call her up, you know, and I'd put on the voice, you know, whatever it was.
Hello, my name is Margaret here. I'm calling from the HSE. I'm just wondering, is that Winifred? It is Winifred. Hello, Winifred. I'm just wondering, we give you the meals and wheels. Now, I was wondering if you'd like to pay a little supplement to get some exotic food. We might be giving, we might give you some foie gras maybe one day, or maybe some moule marinière. Would you like that? You'd pay a fiver a day extra.
And she'd know it was me immediately.
You're a
scoundrel. How are you, Paul, she'd say.
You know? Where was she from?
She was from Donegal.
Donegal, okay.
But Mom is very like her. Mm-hmm. And like we'd mess all the time, and you know, there'd be times I'd go up and bring Gran out for lunch, and the Meals on Wheels lady would be arriving with her lunch, where I'm actually bringing her out to the pub for lunch, to the dropping weather somewhere. So I'd kind of have to hide, and there was this kind of like pantomime, you know, don't let her see me. You're staying here for lunch, Gran, okay? The Meals on Wheels are coming, yeah. You know? And so my relationship with my Gran, now she never knew I was gay.
Okay.
Now, I'd imagine she had suspicions because she was constantly at me about female friends that I had to see,
yeah,
were we involved romantically. Mm. And I think that's a sign that maybe she did know. But Mom is very like her. Mm. So I our relationship is kind of similar.
Was she strict growing up?
Mom?
Yeah.
Dad was the strict one.
Yeah.
Mom kind of defers to Dad a lot when it comes to matters that involve being strict. Mm. I know where you're coming from. She comes across as quite a strict person at times. But no, she wasn't overly strict. Mm.
And then tell me about your relationship with Elaine. Were you close? How many years difference between you and Elaine?
A year.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. And then, like, what's your relationship like? Are you closer because you're adopted, do you think, or has that got nothing to do with it?
I don't think it should have anything to do with it. In reality, I don't know. I don't think the fact of us being adopted really plays a part in our relationship. Mm. Not on a conscious level,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Are you close? Close brother and sister? You seem very close on Instagram.
Well, we fight like cats and dogs, you know, as any brother and sister does, and you know, she can annoy me and I can annoy her. And
are you protective of her?
I was always protective of my sisters, yeah. Mm. Always. Even as a child.
And the difference between Joanne as well?
Joanna's a year younger than again.
Okay, God, quite close. Fair play to your mum and dad. Mm. Fun house.
Yeah, so they had 3 under 3.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Pulling me hair out, I'd be.
Yeah, yeah. But I get on well with both of them equally. I suppose when we were growing up, there might have been a slight difference. I might have been more pally with Elaine and... But now as we get older, it's kind of...
Washes away everything. You just need each other more, yeah. I think, in older years. And whether you fall off in your 30s, 40s, I think the older you get is when you really need family.
Yeah.
You need your brother and sisters around you.
Yeah.
That's what I think now.
Yeah.
So let's go on then to Charleville Lodge. So did you know, what did you study in college? Is that what you wanted to do? Did you know you were going into the family business? Tell me about that.
So I went through different phases of my life in terms of what I wanted to be. Okay. So when I was in secondary school, there was a phase where I really wanted to be a doctor.
Imagine. Your bedside manner.
I think I was watching too much ER, to be honest with you. Remember ER?
Yeah, George Clooney and your other man. What was his name? Eaton something, was it?
Yeah, I was watching a lot of ER.
Okay.
And I wanted to be a doctor. Then there was a time I wanted to be a TV presenter.
Okay.
Because I was watching too much Pat Kenny on Kenny Live or The Late Late Show.
You a fan?
I like Pat Kenny, yeah. No, he's not everybody's cup of tea, but I like his interviews. Style, I like. I used to like his flamboyant jackets that he wear.
Yeah.
I was like, I like his presenting style. I listen to News Talk a lot. Then there was a time where I considered becoming an actor.
Right.
I suppose the common theme with all of these things is one of performance. You're performing. And I think what I've ended up being is a performer. And I suppose in the absence of knowing exactly what I wanted to do around my Leaving Cert, I decided to go for the safe route, which was hotel management. Because mum and dad were in the business. So I went to the Shannon College of Hotel Management.
Okay.
I did my leaving in 98. I got 295 points.
Fair play.
Well, I didn't get enough points to get into the Shannon College of Hotel Management. I needed 2 honours. I didn't get the 2 honours. So the next year I repeated and I got 5 points less, 290 points.
Fucks.
But I got two honours.
Okay, yeah, all right.
I failed, like, so many different things. Because, and I got into Shannon. But that year I kind of was going through a difficult patch, and I think I only went to Ashfield College to repeat my leaving. But I think I only ended up going into school about probably less than 50% of the time. I probably spent the other 50% in bed or drinking. And... So that's what got me into... So I did hotel management anyway in college. And here I am.
Yeah. And so, I am going to talk about the controversy and the stuff that you do to, as we said, genius or controversy, but it's all in one. It's all in the same ball as such. How important for you then was it to go out on your own with the White Moose? And then do you break it to the parents, I'm going to do this, and was there support and so on?
So, I suppose I've always wanted to, like, I have a famous phrase, and that's, like, go big or go home. And I always wanted to be successful, and I always wanted to kind of make it on my own. mum and dad, they had a very successful business, but it was only one business. I wanted multiple, and I want multiple, and I'm on the right track, I guess, and I want to make it big. And 2015, so I started in Charleville Lodge 2003. Charleville Lodge is a guest house, mm-hmm. and it has 30 rooms. Let me just think if I can remember the actual blurb. Charleville Lodge is an elegant Victorian terrace of houses located in the Phibsborough area of Dublin City. It boasts 30 well-appointed guest rooms. That was from a video I did back in the day. Jesus, what a terrible video. Oh my God.
I'll have to look the video up.
I looked like, I don't know, I'm not even going to say what I looked like.
Did you have the beard? No.
I had a goatee.
Okay.
Oh, it was terrible. I had long hair. Back in the day, I actually had some hair. I had a kind of part. I had a fanny split and a goatee and glasses. I looked hideous. Like,
did you ever
if someone said that's a serial killer there, you'd probably believe it, you know. I look terrible. Oh, God. I'm a bit like Benjamin Button. I get younger as the years go by. I looked like twice my age back then, and that was 10 or 15 years ago. But, So that was back in my normal days. Mm. Charleville Lodge, an elegant Victorian terrace. That then I kind of got settled in. So I went to the Merrion first. I was fired from the Merrion Hotel. Oh, here, I could be here all night, Rebecca.
I know. Tell me why you were fired from the Merrion. Tell me that, because that's, I'm sure, interesting.
So some people may already know this story, but I was on duty at 5:30 one morning. I was a supervisor in private dining, not conference and banqueting, because in the Merrion it's called private dining. Mm-hmm. And I was out the night before, and I came in for work at about 5:15, but I'd only got home about 4:30, tried to get a bit of sleep on the couch. Phone woke up. I had the alarm set for 5:15 or something like that, but I missed that. I can't remember quite, but I think it was the taxi ringing me that woke me up to say he was outside. So absolutely blind drunk still at that time of the morning. Came in to work, put on my suit. I had American guests to serve. And no matter what I did that morning, nothing was right. Now, not only did I stink of drink, but I was probably visibly still drunk. The sausages weren't hot enough, and the coffee wasn't hot enough, and I really wanted to eat these sausages. I was starving, you know. There was a big buffet breakfast there: bacon, sausage, egg, whatever, white black pudding, and I really wanted to tuck into this. And the Americans, there was nothing right. So I got to the point where I just said, "Fuck this," and I walked into my locker, took off the suit. Got into my civvies, pissed off, out the door, walked down to Grafton Street and went into Bewley's.
Oh, lovely.
And had my own fry. And, but told nobody, you know, because I just wasn't in the right frame of mind. And then I said, right, what do I do now? Still drunk. I said, I'm going to follow my dream. So I got onto the 46A. I went out to RTE. I walked into Montrose, up to the desk in the main reception area and said, hello, I'd like to speak to somebody about becoming a TV presenter. And your one behind the desk looked up at me with her glasses over her nose. And then she looked at Fidelma or whatever was beside her and then looked back up and didn't know what to expect her to say next, but she said, hey, sure, aren't you here till 9? If you'd like to take a seat in the canteen. So I went into the canteen. And I remember Argentina were playing England in the World Cup. This is around 2002.
This is bonkers.
Yeah. And so I was still fairly drunk. Had my nice little coffee, whatever it was, in the RTE canteen while the match was playing. David Beckham was playing. Remember that World Cup. And then it came to 9 o'clock. So I walked around. The two, Fidelma and Mary, probably didn't know were they ever going to see me again. Mm. Here's me, lunatic, stinking a drink. True as, you know, coming back at the 9 o'clock. Yeah. I'm back Is HR in yet?
Oh my God.
And your woman with the glasses still over her nose. You see that phone over there? Just pick that up and dial 8 or whatever the number was. That's your the HR, so I dial it. Hello, my name is Paul Stenson. I'm here to speak to somebody about becoming a TV presenter. You're what? Yeah, I'm here to... Hang on 2 seconds. Transfer me to the head of TV programs. Hello? Hi, my name is Paul Stenson. I'm just looking to speak to somebody about becoming a TV presenter. Where are you? Oh, I'm just down in the reception area. Hang on, I'll be down to you now. Okay. So your man appears. Right, I'll give you 5 minutes. Come here, we go into the concourse. So we walk to the concourse in RTE. And we both sit down. 45 minutes later, I'm still there with him. And he's telling me, look, Paul, this is a bit mad. But there's two ways you get into TV.
Yeah.
One is by becoming a journalist in college and doing the relevant courses. And the other is by doing exactly what you're doing now.
Holy shit.
So what I'd like you to do is go away and do a self-tape of you doing whatever you do best, whether that's current affairs, comedy, sport, journalism, whatever it is, and send it in to this man's name and we'll get back to you. So then I said, thank you very much. And he said, thank you very much. And I exited RTE and went back to the bus stop to get the 46A back into town. And at this point, I put my phone back on. And the phone kept... This is back when we had the old Nokias. Yeah. Do you remember the ringing tone was like... Yeah. This is all... messages coming in. Look at my phone, like 10 voicemails and 10 texts. So then I ring the voicemail and it's like the general manager of the Merion, the HR director of the Merion, the, you know, Jesus. Duty manager, the security manager, all looking to see where I am. Am I injured? Did I fall? Is everything okay? And I'm like, oh God. This was part of my college placement, by the way.
Oh my God.
So I said, oh, I'm just going to go home. So I got the 46A into town, got the 15 back to my house, went up to my bed and hid from the world. And then my mum comes to the front door and I hear the phone ring and I hear my mum downstairs. Hello? No, Paul's gone to work. Yeah, he went this morning. He's not there. Oh, hang on, I'll check upstairs. Can't do the sound effects of my mum walking up the stairs now, but imagine my mum walking
the terror of her as well.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't so much I was terrified.
No, whore being terrified. Like,
yeah. Her worried, sick of where I am.
Like you get that phone call, your child's supposed to be working, they're not in work.
Yeah, yeah. You know? But they were in work and now they're not anymore. Yeah. What has happened?
Yeah.
So she comes through the door, phone in hand, director of HR on the phone. Now just imagine. So I'm hiding under my bed. I peep out the cover and I'm like gesturing to her. No. I don't want to speak. And mum is like, what in the name of Jesus is going on here? And of course, Kathy, who's the HR director on the phone, can probably hear, unless my mum has put her on mute. I don't even know if that was a thing back in those days on these phones. But so I just kind of gesture, no. So she doesn't know what to do. So in the absence of knowing what to do, she hands me the phone. I just hang up.
Oh, my God.
Paul, what's going on? Oh, please, mum, just get out. I can't do this. Okay. Are you? And it was just like, so I was fired for that.
God.
Then I was later reinstated because it was part of my college. I was in fourth year college. Was suspended from college for a year because I did that. But then I was reinstated as a telephone operator on the switchboard in the Merion, downstairs, away from human contact. I was like put down in the dungeon. All you do is answer phones. You don't see anybody. You don't come into contact with anybody. You're down there. So I did my time as switchboard operator. And then I expressed an interest in becoming a receptionist in the Marion reception desk. And I actually, after 2 weeks, I got it. And then I was there for a number of months. And then I was eventually brought back to the bar, where I had worked for 3 months previously in my second year placement, but that's a long story. Anyway, so then I spent the next 2.5 years in the Marion. And it was the worst 2.5 years of my life. I don't like 5-star hotels because the people who go into them, now some of them have a lot of money, but others go in to pretend they have money. Mm. And they're the ones who click their fingers. Mm. And they're the ones who give off this impression of wealth and superiority, when in fact they haven't got a penny to their name. And they treat you like a, not a person, but a number or a role. You're not Paul Stenson. You're the bartender. You're not important. Make me a pint of Guinness and shut up, type of thing.
Awful.
But you know what I mean?
And I've seen it.
And that's why that has never happened ever in any of the White Mooses. I value all of the staff as much as, in fact, probably more than I do customers, to be honest with you.
Oh, you can
because
tell.
Because I've learned.
Yeah, you can see that one.
So then I went into Charles Village in 2003. And now I kind of had carte blanche to do what I like, you know. But I took it easy and I was...
Because you paid your dues? Because they'd seen you as paying your dues?
I served my time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went into work for my parents. So things were a bit more loose, you know. But I kept it tame for the first few years.
What's the first controversial thing and backlash thing that you did?
The Garth Brooks.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
So... Back when, do you remember Garth Brooks was supposed to play the Five concerts?
Yeah.
And he was and he wasn't and he was and he wasn't. So I got, so my one of my best friends at the time was working in Croke Park, the catering company that did Croke Park. And he said to me, Paul, I'll just give you a heads up. We've been asked to order in all the stuff. It looks like all five concerts are going ahead. Right, this was before anyone knew. So I took it upon myself to go onto the Charles Village Facebook page that had about 3,000 followers and say, I can't tell you exactly how I know, but I can confirm for definite that all five Garth Brooks concerts will be going ahead. Likes, shares, comments coming in thick and fast. So much so that like, news outlets started doing stories. Does this hotel know something we don't? Her.ie, Joe.ie, The Journal, all of the RTE, all of these news outlets. And then about 2 or 3 hours later, RTE 9 o'clock news breaks the news that they're not happening at all. So I put up one. So what do you do?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you say the page was hacked?
Yeah.
Do you like delete the page? What do you do? I put up one word. Oops. Right. And that was the beginning. That one word, oops, was the beginning of my social
media.
Where
did you learn that, Paul?
I didn't learn it anywhere. There's some things you don't learn. There's some things you just have inside. There's a devil inside of you that's waiting to be unleashed. And where did I learn it? Okay. You could bring it back to those years in the Marion where I had to bite my lip and I had to nod and say, yes, sir, no, sir, 3 bags full, sir. And then I was loose in my parents' business and I was allowed to. So it was like I was unleashed. And that's, so I didn't learn it anywhere, but it came from that place. And that word, oops, was the beginning of it all. Because I started, people were, you know, trolling me and hating on me, and I started lashing back the way I do now. And people found my retaliation or my rebuttal to these hateful comments quite funny, because I try to be comedic in what I do and what I say, especially in the comments section. it comes from a place of comedy. I don't really argue over facts.
Yeah.
I always think like a 6-year old child. When I'm answering comments on Facebook, I think like what a 6-year old child. And I don't have any like, I just go with the first thing that comes into my head. Mm. It can be often very, very inappropriate, but it can be often very, very funny.
Mm.
And I suppose it's because it's coming from a business page where people would expect this business to treat the customer as always right, mm-hmm. that it's even more comedic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get me? Mm. So that's where it started.
And now we're at blowjobs. Free blowjobs.
And now the free blowjobs. Mm. Yeah.
And can I, would you say like that you're self-made or... I would like to think that you're self-made.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Made of what?
As in, like, you know, someone say, oh, that's mammy and daddy. That's all mammy and daddy. But I...
So, I know a lot of the haters will say, oh, you inherited.
Yeah.
Well, firstly, I didn't inherit anything because they still own it. Mm. secondly, I started the White Moose. Mm. They didn't. And just... to give you an example of, you know, I suppose the type of reach some of my stuff would have had. If you remember back to Bloggergate, where, remember the English blogger?
Yes.
Was looking for 5 free nights.
Yes.
Over the Valentine's.
Yes.
And I wrote a reply to her and I redacted her name, but someone was able to actually find it and send it on to her. And then she did a 17 minute YouTube video crying about how she was exposed and all this kind of stuff. The reach of that one controversy alone, Rebecca, was 800 million people.
Wow.
So, and a company called Clear Story, who's they're a PR agency, ran all the figures on it. And we were mentioned, the White Moose was mentioned in 483 news articles across 43 countries. And the AVE, which is Advertising Value Equivalency, if you were to pay to have the White Moose name in each of the publications it was in, mm-hmm. have a guess how much you would have had to spend.
Like hundreds of millions.
That's a bit of a stretch.
Is it?
8.4 million.
8.4 million. Wow.
8.4 million.
Jesus.
It's probably twice the value of the hotel. So anybody out there who wants to tell me that I'm lucky and I inherited a business, just put that in your pipe and smoke it.
And you give back. I love to see you give back. And I know during COVID, because I went through your page, they only recently, you did that with the brands. But more importantly now, you're doing the sponsorship of McCarthy. What's his name? Oh, Jesus, of course, Tom McCarthy. So you're loving that, are you? Yeah, I see it yesterday. I was like, he's loving it. And then is it Talcaro?
What do you mean by that?
Just I see you loving that. Look at your face now. You tell me that you love St. Paul as well.
No. Funnily enough, he wouldn't be my type, really.
Really?
Yeah, he wouldn't really. No, he's a beautiful looking man. But no, I wouldn't. Yeah. I he wouldn't really. But no, he's like, no, he wouldn't be my type. No. But I think, yeah, it's a Toker Rovers basketball team as well. We sponsor the female team. The ladies team, should I say, and Thomas, because I do think it's important to give back and I do think it's important to recognise local talent. And the likes of Thomas, he's been coming into us for years now and he's actually a sound bloke. So we said we'd sponsor him. I'm not expecting anything in return. I'm just helping out a local lad. And then one of the girls who used to work in the White Moose, Amy, she's on the ladies' basketball team for Toker Rovers. And so we said we'd sponsor that team as well. And they're a lovely bunch of girls. And it just so happens. No, I can't say that. So. Well, I can. But you are getting, you know, you're very privileged, Rebecca, here. You're very privileged.
I know, go on.
Do you know where our new site is?
I know it's in Glasnevin.
Oh! Well, you said it rather than me.
Oh, fuck! Have I just done that?
No, you said it rather than me. That's fine. Yeah, so, the Toker Rovers team is pretty apt. All sponsoring right. them at this time is pretty apt.
Okay.
But I still didn't say it.
No.
Okay.
Because we were going to go there yesterday and we didn't. We went to Finglas. So, yeah. Up beside Des Kelly. One of the, okay. Yeah. Right, okay. So then, Paul, I wouldn't, like, I know from my people, they'll say, why didn't she ask him this? And I know, just because I think your and Jason's relationship, I think there was people for yous, and then there was a huge amount of people against yous. But other than Jason, has there been any big loves of your life? And was Jason a love of your life?
Ah, he was, yeah. Mm. Yeah. I like we spent 5 years together, you know. And, yeah, he was definitely a love. Sure, I even got down on my knee and proposed to him. That ring is now on my mantelpiece at home.
Right.
But look, it won't go to waste. I'm sure someone will be very happy to have it. But yeah, no, I know, like, he was a love of my life, but has there been anybody since? No.
No.
No. Would I like there to be someone? I'm enjoying being single at the moment. That's not to say that in time it would be nice to settle down, but you know, I'm happy where I am.
Would you like to have a family of your own?
I would, but like the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm 41 now, so
yeah.
You know, it could still happen.
Mm.
But I don't know. Probably have to meet someone first. Although yeah. I know I can adopt as a single father, but at the moment I'm happy being single and I'm happy with my three dogs.
Good. The one thing I want to ask you about before I let you go, because I know I'm going to let you, your phone has been hopping the whole time.
Don't worry, I'm used to that.
The Dublin, like, what? How the Dublin Live, the Keane Egan thing, do you remember you did that? Like, I just think, like, one, are people either really invested in who they love, like, as in the Westlifes and the Bisons, or are people just really stupid?
I think that you can never underestimate the stupidity of people. I think people are inherently stupid. that comes across as very... but no, people... No. Look, and I'm speaking from experience.
People looking at your comments, yeah, people are stupid.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But... So just for anybody who doesn't know what that's about. Mm. So Cian Egan was in the White Moose one day with the family. And I don't think I was there at the time. I said, get a picture with him and the staff outside the front. Yeah, okay. So I got a lovely picture with him. And I could have put up, delighted to have Cian Egan from Westlife in the cafe today. But that wouldn't be really our style. So I put up, we were delighted to have Nicky Byrne from Boyzone in the cafe today. Mm-hmm. And so immediately, that's Cian Egan from West. So the more comments you get immediately, the higher the organic reach.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what? So that's what we do. We put up stuff to create organic engagement. So that we don't have to spend money promoting posts. Mm. So I've never spent a cent promoting any of our social media posts. We don't need to. But they have to have that sweet spot. They have to have that outrage element. Mm. The free blowjobs. Mm. Obviously not 100% of people agree with it, but we're counting on that. We want a certain percentage of people not to agree with it. So the agreeers and the disagreeers will then fight each other online, which, and it's all in our comment section. So it's boosting that organic reach. So the ideal split is 50-50, 50 like it and 50 dislike it. Rarely happens. Mm. It's usually 80-20. I think the free blowjobs was 90-10. But like...
No, I would have killed you if I passed it with Amelia. With Aria, not so much, but if I passed it with Aria, I would have been, or Amelia, I would have been like, but I didn't. Like,
but, you know, where we're located, you're not going to be walking by it.
Yeah.
The people who will be walking by it are workers.
Yeah.
Who are working in a fairly male-dominated domain in warehouses, in garages, in stuff like that. I wouldn't have put free blowjobs outside Swords Pavilions, the Moose Bus, because it's a family orientated space.
Yeah.
Do you get me?
Yeah.
So the likelihood, Rebecca, of you walking with any of the kids is not very high.
Do you know that it's rumoured that Paddy Power's one of his top marketing guys had a different name? They called him, instead of like marketing director, they called him Chief Mischief Maker.
Wouldn't be surprised.
And that was his, what he was called. And I have to say, of the White Moose Cafe, you are the Chief Mischief
Maker. Yeah, I'll take that.
It's such a cool role. That. I think it's just the funniest, you know, but that's what he was rumoured to be. That was his title.
And I like that.
Yeah.
I call myself Pot Washer at the moment.
Seen that.
Yeah. You know, you have all these people, CEO and managing director and owner. Ah, go way out of that. I'm a pot washer. Do you get me?
Yeah.
But I like that. Chief Mischief Maker.
Yeah. It's
I good might one, even steal that.
You should. I think you should. Yeah. Because this is only a rumor. It's not there. I've been told by people. But yeah, that's the role. And I just thought, that is just genius.
I love it.
Isn't it brilliant?
I love it.
Yeah.
So Rebecca, it was you who.
Yeah.
If you ever see that appear in my bio any day,
you can
claim it.
I'll claim it.
All right.
Paul, talk to me about the future for you and White Moose and, you know, your plants. Is it global domination? Is it national domination?
So, I've recently started White Moose Media.
Okay.
I'll tell you one thing about food. There's easier ways to make money than in food.
Is there?
Yeah. And there's more stress-free, hassle-free ways of making money than in food.
Right.
So, I've set up White Moose Media because... I think that's where my strengths lie. My strengths don't lie in moosties.
Mm.
They lie in mischief making.
Yeah.
They lie in media. Mm. So that's my baby. White Moose Cafe will be there, but my plan is to open 20 cafes across Ireland, sell, get out. Now, I'll always own all the IP. Mm-hmm. I own all the intellectual property myself. Personally, not my company, me personally. So whoever buys it off me will always pay me a royalty.
Okay.
But my future is in White Moose Media. Food is great, but...
And what does the media, what does that mean, White Moose Media? What does it mean?
So, for example, at the moment, and again, you're getting all the inside information.
Okay.
So any posts I do for White Moose Cafe... whether it's on White Moose Cafe channel or my own or any stories I do, they're done on behalf of White Moose Media for White Moose Cafe. And White Moose Cafe pays White Moose Media 3% of gross turnover every month. That goes into my media company. And then my media company expenses. So if I want to take a flight to Spain, my media company will expense all that because it's part of my show.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than me taking the 3% where I'd have to be taxed personally, and that to be at whatever 50% or whatever the horrible rate is, it just goes into White Moose Media Limited. And I can, if I want to buy a suit, it's a costume for the show. Mm-hmm. Or if I want, you know.
And is it a show?
A camera.
Is it a show?
It is a show, ultimately. Mm-hmm. What I do is a show. It's like a reality TV show, if you like.
Would you say the greatest show?
I would say it's the best show in the world.
I love you, I swear to God.
So, yeah.
And on that note, Paul, we leave it there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming here and sitting down and allowing the girls to come in and say hello to you. And all, my mother-in-law's just interrupted us now, so thank God we're finished. But Paul, thank you so much for sitting down with me. And this will go out Monday, and I'm sure everyone will be delighted to listen.
If they make it to the end and they're not bored.
They won't be.
Stiff by halfway. Okay. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thanks, Paul.
Talk to you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.